Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmuck, Lance Mehta with you. The phone number, if you want to talk to us, is 201-939-4513 or Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We've had guests on every show this week. I think some informative ones, some good ones, but that means we've had limited time for you on the phone. So we're going to take all day to take your calls on Giants free agency at 201-939-4513. Jonathan Stewart official, Nate Solder official, Kareem Martin official. We know there's reports of maybe another move in the hopper. We could talk about that if you want to talk about that. Whatever's on your mind, we'll take your calls all show long. One thing I will ask, humbly, let's not get into the whole who the Giants should pick at two today. We've talked about that all year. We can do it for the next month and a half. Let's try to focus a little bit more on free agency and roster construction because I think, Lance, that's kind of the story now more so than what the Giants are going to do at number two. You can do it if you want, but please do it. That is going to be what the next month and a half is going to be. So let's try to focus on what's going on right now. And, Lance, let's get to it first. Nate Solder, had a chance to talk to him yesterday. The interview's on Giants.com. He was on a conference call with reporters today, and the word that kept coming to mind for me listening to him speak was humble. I asked him, you know, whether or not he could bring, you know, whatever chemistry, magic formula that the Patriots have that allow them to be so consistent and bring it here. And the reporters today asked him the same question. He said, look, I'm just here to be a Giant. I'll do whatever they tell me. I'm trying to fit in to Dave Gettleman and the Giants culture. So he's a guy that seems to understand the offensive line wins as a unit. It's not about an individual. And he just seems to be excited to come here and be the centerpiece of what looks like it's going to be a almost completely rebuilt offensive line.
Well, it certainly is shaping up to be that way, John. There's no doubt about it. I think what was interesting was, you know, they was pressed upon whether or not, you know, he's viewed as the savior of the offensive line, and he sort of shied away from that and said, listen, it's going to take the entire unit from a chemistry standpoint. The good news for him is he's somebody that has a great deal of experience, and you like that. I mean, he's played left tackle since 2012. He's been a cornerstone of the Patriots offensive line. With the exception of a biceps injury, he's been fairly durable, and he even has experience going back to his rookie year at right tackle. So you're talking about a player that has a wealth of experience, a wealth of knowledge, and he protected Tom Brady's blind side, and I think he's done it pretty effectively. So there's no reason why he can't do the same for Eli Manning here moving forward. And it appears Eric Flowers, based on the press release, what Dave Gettleman said, is going to move to the right side. He's going to compete on the right side, at least. That's obviously the key operating term. Nobody's saying that he's definitely going to be on the right side, but they're going to give him the opportunity to compete. Pat Shurmur already
at right tackle specifically, he
correct.
Said, yes.
And Pat Shurmur made that clear immediately after they signed Nate Solder. So I think there's no gray area there, John. There's clarity in terms of that situation, but you know, we still don't know the five pieces that are going to be thrown out there.
And
a lot
you
of
hit it.
It's a guessing game.
They said he'll compete at right tackle, but then the point was also made to Eric Flowers when Pat Shurmur gave him a call on the phone to make sure that, you know, he didn't get all upset and annoyed over the fact that they signed Nate Solder, who is going to play the position that Flowers has played the last 3 years. Not that, you know, he has a right to be upset, but it's always good to communicate better with the players it works. They said he'll move to have a chance to compete at right tackle, like you said, but, and this was the caveat, the best five yeah. offensive linemen are going to play.
Which is how it should always be.
Exactly. And that, to me, leaves the door open that maybe Flowers is going to be best at guard. Maybe he's going to be best at tackle. It makes sense to leave him at tackle first. I get it. And when we talked to Ross Tucker on Wednesday, he made an interesting point. As is somebody who played offensive line, is it easier for him to move into left guard so he stays in his same footwork pattern, playing on the left side, and his mechanics kind of remain the same? Or is it easier for him to stay a tackle but go to the right side, which changes his footwork all around because they're playing the other side of the line? So, and he was honestly wasn't really sure which one would be an easier move for him. But I will say this, Lance, and this is one of our this is one of the pet peeves of our friends over at Pro Football Focus. And we've had this conversation many times, and I think we're in agreement
on
it.
Oh, I know exactly what you're going to bring up. Definitely had this conversation.
The idea now in the modern-day NFL that you can put the big slow guy over at right tackle and he's going to be fine because he doesn't have to deal with big pass rushers is simply not true anymore. You cannot hide anybody. And the reason is very, very simple. Teams no longer just line up their best pass rusher – over a team's left tackle. They move guys around. And I'm going to take Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus, his tweet from earlier today. So in 2018, these are some of the matchups Eric Flowers will deal with at right tackle. DeMarcus Lawrence, twice. Best pass rusher on Dallas. Ryan Kerrigan, twice. Best pass rusher on the Redskins. Brandon Graham, twice. Best pass rusher on the Eagles. Whitney Mercilus, once. Excellent pass rusher for the Texans. Vic Beasley, best pass rusher for the Falcons. Cam Jordan, best pass rusher for the Saints. So, folks, there's no guarantee that you move him to the right side and voila, everything's fixed. This is, he's still going to have to improve as a player, get better with his footwork, get better with his technique, if he's going to play well at right tackle. And that's why, as it should be, it's going to be a competition to see who earns their way onto the field.
Well, and to be honest with you, Sam could have listed every single Giants opponent for the upcoming season. No, I'm not trying to make a joke. The truth is, John, in today's football, every team's got two solid pass rushers that they're confident that they can line up on the left and the right side. So, I mean, clearly those are some of the guys that he's going to see, but you're going to see plenty of others that teams are going to be able to throw his way. You're 100% right. You can't just cover up a guy or all of a sudden assume we move to the right side and then everything magically strengthens by moving a player from the left to the right side. It doesn't work that way. Your point about asking Ross Tucker what his thoughts were, I mean, Eric Flowers has never played guard.
Correct.
His football career. I would be hesitant just from the outside looking in and saying that that would be option number one. I think the right side makes sense because he played there as a true freshman at Miami in 2012. He played there for 12 games. He started four. So you're putting him in a situation that he at least has some experience in. There's no reason that they can't experiment at one of the guard spots, but I still think right tackle makes a lot more sense than just worried about, well, the left guard is an easier transition because his footwork would be similar to what he had to do the last few seasons.
Well, I think the other argument you can make, too, why guard might be the better landing spot is if he does struggle at right tackle, like you said, you're still kind of on an island against a pass rusher, but at guard, it's a lot easier to give help with the center. It's a lot easier to protect that player a little bit, the way you slide protection and things like that. I mean, I went back and I looked at tape at some guards the last couple of years, you know, for free agency and things like that, and there are plays where a guard sometimes on a pass down doesn't even block anybody because they line up a three technique on the other side, they put a nose on the center, and no one's even on the guard. That never happens to a tackle. Like at tackle, every single down, you have a pass rusher trying to kill your quarterback. So it's a much easier position to help than tackle is the way I'd put it.
But your arms are so important in terms of the guard spot, too.
Oh, yeah, and your strength,
and,
of course.
And obviously that's a big part of the fundamentals. But, yes, you don't want to be El Matador that just allows the defender to come right by you. You want to be in a position where you know what your assignment is as opposed to when you're playing tackle. You know pretty much the edge rusher, more often than not, is the guy that you're probably picking up.
Well, and I think, and kind of going full circle here and getting back to Nate Solder, having a guy like that at left tackle, where even if he's not like an all-pro, best, you know, left tackle in all football, which is fine, it's a guy you know can handle his business. And Nate Solder, if you leave him out there on an island, one-on-one, he can handle his business. Is he going to block the guy every single time? No. But he's going to do good enough where if you think you need help at right tackle, you know what, then you can send the chip over there. One of the issues the Giants had last year is that, well, do you help Eric Flowers or do you help Bobby Hart? They help Chad Wheeler if he's out there. You know, they didn't have one guy that you knew, without any help, could go out there and handle their business the way Nate Solder
can.
With
their one-on-one assignment.
And I think that will, in turn, help the offensive line as a whole. When you have that very important left tackle spot, you know, held down, and you're like, you know what, Nate? You got it. We don't have to worry about it. Eli feels more comfortable, and everybody wins.
Yeah, and where you could also move the running back over to in terms of assignments and help and pass protection.
Chip on the right side.
Correct.
Instead.
Changes as a result of not necessarily needing to pick every spot, but you can at least focus on one area of the O-line. So it certainly changes the dynamics and the rationale from a coaching perspective there.
No question about it. The other announcement that was made in terms of a signing yesterday was Kareem Martin. Interesting player, and I think with Giant fans, and I've seen this on Twitter, and I've done my best to try to explain it, Giant fans are going to have to kind of understand the new terminology and player usage that's going to take place under James Betcher's defense. Yeah, James Kareem Martin is listed as a linebacker. He's not really what a Giant fan thinks about when they think about linebacker over the past 15 years since Tom Coughlin was here and they played a 4-3. I stood next to Kareem Martin yesterday, and again, go to Giants.com and you can see that interview. He's built like a defensive end. He looks like JPP. Yeah. He's looks more like a DN than even Olivier Vernon does. He is much more of a Kiwanuka-style body.
Hybrid.
Tall, long, you know, he's thicker than Kiwanuka was even though. He's 6'6", he's 270. And look, you're only in base defense, what, 25, 30% of the time now?
That's how it was in Arizona
on the game
last year.
Yeah. So he'll be a stand-up guy in the 3-4 in the base defense. Will rush the passer. He'll play coverage a little bit when he drops, but he has to set the edge in the run, and for that, you need a bigger guy. But when you go to sub-package nickel dime, he's going to be a hand-in-the-dirt defensive end. The Arizona Cardinals used him in a tackle as well, and he's going to rush the passer that way. So this he's not Jonathan Casillas. He's not even Devon Kennard. He's bigger than that.
Yeah.
But he is going to be an on the line of scrimmage type of player. He's not going to be like a, you know, one of these run and chase linebackers that's going to be running all over the field. That's not his game.
Well, he started his career off as a defensive lineman, and then he was converted within James Betcher's defense to more of a linebacker type of role. But I mean, what you just laid out, John, is that hybrid type of player. That is the definition and the identity of a James Betcher defense. He loves those guys that are versatile, that you can mix and match and move around. And it's the same thing with a safety slash linebacker or two on the back end, a guy that you could bring up in the middle of your defense and then also play in the center field spot. I think you're going to see how he utilizes some of his corners and his safeties in a mannerism that matches up like that. So, I mean, the more versatility you have in this type of defense, I think that is an ideal circumstance for the DC. And I think the big picture perspective from Martin, regardless of how they utilize him, John, is this is the first player that has familiarity with the scheme. So it's a player that you bring in, and everybody else can lean on him and be like, all right, well, when you ran this last year with Arizona, how did they use Chandler Jones, or how did they utilize Buda Baker? And then the player that is taking on that role can at least look at Martin for some assistance and guidance. The other thing I wanted to add is you added Kareem Martin and Alec Ogletree. You added two linebackers, different in terms of style, but, John, they're both 26 years old, and they're both entering the prime of their careers. So that, I think, is encouraging. Two players that you could build around moving forward.
Yeah, one guy, an inside linebacker, and he's more of your traditional linebacker that Giant fans would think of, that run and
the
hit,
helmet too.
You know, communicates. Yeah. He's a speed guy, sideline to sideline. He's the type of traditional linebacker, and he'll be on the field as a linebacker in the sub-packages too, while Martin will turn into a defensive lineman in the sub-packages. And you're right. Those guys, I would say they're maybe not entering their prime. They're probably already just started their prime of their career.
But, I mean, they certainly got plenty of years ahead of them.
The bottom year is that
stays healthy.
The length of their contracts will be in their prime years for the Giants. That's the point, and you're absolutely right about that. So you hope these guys can help build the defense. Now, don't expect Kareem Martin to come in here and get 12 sacks.
No,
either.
That's
not his game. But he's going to, again, be a guy you can lean on because he knows the defense. And he's also going to be able to take some of those snaps away from Vernon and JPP, where they're playing 90% of the snaps last year. Well, when they go to sub, or even in the 3-4 base, one of those guys can take a break. And Martin can be that stand-up outside linebacker or in the sub package, put his hand down in the dirt, and get JPP and Vernon off the field just a little bit. So they're a little bit fresher and not playing 95% of the snaps.
Well, I think that's a great point because, remember, that was the issue Spags faced
time
and time again. I mean, everybody was like, well, you know, why don't you rest these guys? Why don't you try to limit their snaps so that by the time they get to the latter part of the season, they're in better shape or they're not as worn down? And Spags' answer is, well, it's not so easy finding that third reliable option where the production is not going to dip once you take those two guys off the field. So if Kareem Martin can be moved around, then I think James Betcher feels a little bit more comfortable that he can rest the likes of JPP and Vernon, which had been an issue in the previous few seasons. So, I mean, that to me is also like the icing on the cake, thanks to his versatility.
And I think Yoab Avery Moss can maybe develop into one of those
guys. Yeah. Depending on how James Betcher envisions him within the defense. And they have a few other guys that are on the roster too. But, you know, it all depends on how James Betcher sees them fit within his scheme. I mean, right now we can speculate all we want, but if he doesn't feel they'll convert well in his 3-4 alignment, then to me that defeats the purpose.
And one other thing I want to point out, on the call, Kareem Martin, I thought, said a couple things that were interesting. One, he said that outside linebacker position is probably the most important position on Betcher's defense. Now, he plays the position, so he's probably a little biased. I understand that. But I do think he's right. Hassan Reddick played that position last year for them. Obviously, Kareem Martin did. And Chandler Jones did.
Yeah.
Three of their better players. And the reason they're so important is the versatility you mentioned. And just like the safety that can cover and the linebacker that can do all that stuff, rush the passer, hand the dirt, stop the run, all those things those guys have to do. So the Giants are well invested now in that position with their holdovers and then the addition of Martin. So they should be in pretty good shape there as they move forward. And I think it's going to be a nice, solid addition that adds to depth and gives Betcher more options as he tries to figure out where these guys fit in the defense.
It's good to have options. Never a complaint from that perspective, and I'm sure they'll add some youth through the draft. But, you know, the familiarity, I think, is a good starting point. It's always nice to have, if you're a coach, John, it's always nice to have a player that buys into your system already so that other players, I think, could feed off of that. And, you know, you mentioned he did point out the importance of setting the edge in this defense. You know, that he emphasized, I thought, when he spoke with reporters. And also, you know, he utilized the term that it's a one-gap defense.
And that was my second point.
Which is just run straight ahead, get to the quarterback, and it's not overly convoluted where you got to worry about, you know, if this guy moves to the left and I got to move over to the right and so forth. So even though it appears to be a versatile scheme or a scheme where he moves personnel around, the way that Martin broke it down, I think he did a great job simplifying it, is he tells you where you got to be and you do it. And if you stick to your assignment and everybody's on the same page, there's no reason why there should be confusion.
And I think it, and this is the final point before we get to your calls at 201-939-4513, I think it also, Lance, makes the transition a little bit better from the 4-3, because if you want to go back to, you know, Paul Dottino NFL football in the, you know, 80s and early 90s and the 40s and all that sort of stuff.
I was going to say, you should have started with the 40s. I'm surprised you jumped to the 90s.
Well, in the 40s, they didn't have the two different types of defense. But the 3-4 traditionally is what you call a two-gap defense, where the three-down defensive linemen are responsible for two gaps. They'll line up with their head on an offensive lineman, and they're responsible for both gaps on either side of that offensive lineman. So the nose tackle will line up right on the center, and he's responsible for both those gaps. The two defensive linemen will line up what they call the five technique, and they'll be responsible for both those gaps. And basically the goal there for those linemen, and this is why 3-4 defensive linemen had the traditional tendency of being bigger guys, 300-pounders, 290, nose tackles, things like that, they're supposed to occupy the defensive linemen, not penetrate. Hold their ground, occupy them to allow the linebackers to run and make a play. And that's where the 3-4 defense was different, because they had a two-gap system. The 4-3 traditionally was a one-gap system where you line up in a gap between the offensive linemen, and your job is to penetrate into the backfield through that one gap that was your responsibility, and the linebackers would then fill in the other gaps. Even though Betcher runs a 3-4, it's one-gap principles. So these guys are all going to be trying to penetrate upfield, and I think that will make it a little bit easier for these guys that might be used to a 4-3 in their defensive front to adjust to Betcher's system. So, like I said, I think Giant fans will have to take some time to kind of figure out the uniqueness and how this Betcher system is different, which will affect player use.
Well, that's why I think hybrid is an appropriate term, John, not just for the players that are in the system, but it's a hybrid system.
It's
a hybrid scheme. Multiple different looks. Now, Snacks, for example, you know, you brought up that 3-4 defensive lineman that loves to occupy space. Well, he has been in both scenarios.
Yeah.
Because with the Jets, he was in a 3-4. Now he moved to a 4-3 with the Giants, and now he's back to a 3-4. So I don't think it's going to be an issue for him to adjust. And certainly he can find the gap, and he could also take up some space based on his look.
And Dalvin Tomlinson would be fine in either one of those systems.
Another one, too. Well, Alabama ran a 3-4.
Correct.
So he also has experience there.
Exactly. All right, let's do your calls at 201-939-4513. Dave, let's start on line 3 and go to Kevin in Orlando first. He wants to talk about free agency. What's up, Kevin?
Hey, guys, how you doing today?
Doing great. What's up?
Tell me if this makes sense. I kind of look at the Nate Solder signing as kind of like a little bit of a happy accident, because us as fans, and I don't know what Gettleman was thinking ahead of time, but us as fans keep hearing Norwell, Norwell, Norwell. Then we lose Norwell, and it's viewed as Solder as our consolation prize. But when you really sit back and look at it, I would rather have a pretty good left tackle and try to figure out the guard position than have an all-pro guard and go, where the heck am I going to get a left tackle?
No, Kevin, you know what? I think you make a great point, and I think here's the difference between the two. Norwell is, to use draft terminology, the higher-graded player. He's an all-pro, all right? He's also a little bit cheaper, and he's also a little bit younger. So those are the things that you check off in the Norwell column, right? But yep. Nate Solder, like you said, plays the position that has that premium value on it. It's the left tackle. Left tackles that are good starting left tackles don't become free agents. They're very hard to find in the draft. So even though maybe he won't make the same number of Pro Bowls or be an All-Pro as many times as Norwell or, you know, things of that nature, he might bring you more value to the team simply because of the position that he plays. So I think you hit it right on the head.
Well, the only thing I will add, though, is, I mean, listen, you could have the two greatest tackles in the National Football League, but the interior is just as important as setting the edge.
It is, but I think, like I made the point with Flowers before, I think it's a lot easier to find a guard than it is to find a tackle.
I'm not going to disagree with that. I mean, I think that's a valid point. And the other way to look at it is Solder now takes Flowers out of the left tackle spot, moves him to the right. Now, we're talking about you can't hide an offensive lineman, but Solder signing versus Norwell, you could look at it as you've addressed or changed two positions on your offensive line with the signing of Solder, whereas Norwell, he would have just occupied one space and not necessarily provided a chain reaction to the rest of the line.
And you don't feel as much pressure in the draft now to find a tackle. What did Dave Gettleman say, Kevin? He said, free agency, yep. You want to fill your holes so when you get to the draft, you don't have to draft somebody out of position. And now the Giants can go into next season and say, you know what? We don't have to draft a tackle. We don't have to even draft a guard necessarily if a couple other things happen here. Now, I think they will, because they want to improve the position, but they at least have the numbers in the building now where it's not a desperate position in need.
I agree. And my other question for you is, I agree with the Giants moving on for Weston Richburg and keeping Brent Jones, but the contract that the 49ers gave him was pretty alarming to me. So either we don't know what we're doing or the 49ers have no clue what they're doing, it seems like.
Kevin, in my opinion, and I love Weston Richburg, I think he's a good dude, I think he's a good player, I thought that was a bit of an overpay.
Put it lightly. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you, Kevin.
Appreciate the phone call. I mean, remember, it's all about the market, though. You can't get too caught up in the numbers that players receive.
Did any other centers sign for close
to
that?
No, and I'm not saying that, but you know what? Here's the thing. First of all, when Richburg initially signed, Daniel Kilgore was given a 3-year extension, and he was their starting center.
Yeah, and what did he get, like $16 million over 3 years?
Well, I mean, he didn't hit technically the free agent market, though.
Still,
he was already in-house.
Still?
No,
new contract.
The point that I was going to bring up was it's possible that they envisioned maybe the fact that he could play both positions, Richburg, and then all of a sudden Mike Pouncey gets let go by the Dolphins. Miami needs a center, and they're like, well, wait a minute. We just gave Richburg all this money. We don't need to have the competition. We feel good moving him to center. We'll ship out Daniel Kilgore. You know, sometimes you have things on your roster, and then voids come up with other teams, and then you change your direction. Another example, John, is when the Eagles had Carson Wentz, Sam Bradford, and Chase Daniel. You know, they just signed those guys as time was passing. And then all of a sudden, the Vikings have an injury with Teddy Bridgewater, and they ship Sam Bradford out. So, I mean, the Niners, they may have felt as if the more depth we have, the better options we have for competition and to move players around on the offensive line.
Hey, look, and their general manager, Lynch, basically said that they think the center is one of the most important positions in their offense. Kyle Shanahan talked about it, too, the way they set protections, the way they run their outside zone scheme. They want a center that's smart, can change things on the move, and is mobile. And those are the things that Richburg does excel at. He's a very good pass protection center. He's a smart player, and he moves pretty well. Where he's always struggled is moving people in the run game. That's where he's always had some struggles in the past. And, of course, you know about the injury and the concussion last year. But I guess it's a good fit for that system and what they want him to do. But I was surprised when I found out the contract was that big.
Well, I'd like to hear if another team or two was actually pushing for him.
I mean, I don't know.
Without knowing that information, once again, I mean, was San Francisco bidding against itself, John? Or was San Francisco actually bidding against other teams?
Well, let me ask you a question. When he eventually signs, do you think Justin Pugh will get a bigger or smaller contract?
Personally, I think Pugh should get more money.
But do you think he will?
It's hard to say. I mean, I'm surprised that he hasn't been signed already.
And that's where I'm yeah. going. If I would have told you before free agency that Weston Richburg was going to get more money than Justin Pugh, you would have thought I was crazy. And I think
I would have never thought that.
And I think that's what's going to happen since Pugh hasn't signed yet. Now, I do think there are some teams that are still in real need of offensive linemen, like the Jets that have
and
money.
And they're trying to move some money around, too, perhaps.
And the Cardinals that have money.
Which is a team that was rumored to have brought Pugh in for a visit.
So I would not be surprised if Pugh still gets paid. I'm just not sure if he's going to make more than his former teammate, which, like I said, would have shocked the hell out of me if you'd have told me that 2 weeks ago.
Plus also knowing the fact that Pugh can actually play left tackle. So I mean,
well, tackle at least. He hasn't played left tackle in the pros.
But I mean, you have experience there. You're not putting Richburg out at the tackle
position. Yeah, a guard tackle is generally more valuable than a center guard.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, that I would put more value on. But once again, if San Francisco values the center position, they also remember I have a young quarterback they just invested a great deal of money in. They may value that spot more so than other NFL teams. And listen, they're entitled to spend the money they want, and San Francisco had a lot of cap space. The Niners weren't necessarily a team that had a bunch of veterans locked up because they were a relatively young team. So if it doesn't hurt them with other areas in the big picture of things, I mean, I think it's fun to overanalyze contracts, but if you get good production and good value in return, that's all that matters in the National Football League.
201-939-4513. Antonio in Manhattan, he's online too. What's up, Antonio?
Hey, what's going on, guys? I wanted to talk about draft, but I'm going to follow the theme and I'm going to go with free agency instead.
Okay.
I just want to, you know, point out that Nate Solder, you know, we paid him like top five. And again, let's just mention right now that, you know, money is, don't look at the money too much, but he's not a top five tackle according to, you know, most professionals, most statements out there.
Yeah, but Antonio, so that's fine. Kirk Cousins isn't a top five quarterback. It's the market always goes up every year.
It's timing. It's got nothing
it's
to do
the
with
way
how
it goes.
Players. It's about when you hit the market. Quarterbacks are paid based on the previous quarterback contract. Left tackles are paid based on the previous left tackle contract. That's why, I mean, I understand Richburg may not be the ideal comparison, but it's all about when you hit the market and the salary cap goes up every year, which gives teams a little bit more flexibility to throw out more money. That's the economics of football. It's not about the best player in the league getting the highest contract. That's not how the NFL works.
No. Absolutely, I completely agree with you guys. I just wanted to kind of like, I'm a little bit confused, and I want to give like a warning to Giants fans. I mean, this team is in a weird transition right now because it looks like they were trying to rebuild, but now it looks like they're trying to go for it next year. And I just want to label this team as confusing because now what are we going to do with that pick? It's going to be really weird, but you know, I'm going to leave you guys to the end about the draft pick, where to go now, because at the end of the day, it all falls again under Eli Manning. If Eli Manning doesn't have a good year next year, we're not going anywhere. And then that's going to bring a lot of questions. If we want to go for it next year and we're going to draft to go for it next year and then Eli Manning just pulls a bad season, then that's going to really mess up. I mean, that's going to be really bad on Gettleman because we had opportunity to get a quarterback. And if he doesn't do that, then, you know, it's going to be really bad. I want to just talk about also, this is why it's also confusing, because the defense now, we're trying to run a 3-4, we're trying to run a 4-3, and I don't know, I feel like the hybrid stuff, it's also going to mess us up.
Why is that?
Because we just don't have the personnel right now. We're getting all these little pieces, but we're not getting good 3-4 players. We're getting backups right now for 3-4 players.
Antonio, timeout. What players on this roster don't you think fit a 3-4 defense?
JPP doesn't fit a 3-4.
He's the one guy. He's the one guy.
Who else?
No. Antonio, you said multiple. You said players. Besides one player mentioned, who doesn't else fit the 3-4? Please tell me.
Okay, so I could keep going. No. Okay, fine. I can definitely do that. So, right now, I don't believe Snacks would fit the 3-4.
Oh, come on.
He
played in
Dude,
a 3-4.
He started his career in
he
a
made
3-4.
His whole, he made his
no,
money
on,
because of the 3-4 defense.
Where has he been better, in a 4-3 or in a 3-4?
He was great in
both
spots.
With the Jets the last time I checked, Antonio. Come on.
He was great in both spots.
I mean, that to me is a bit of a stretch.
I believe that. And listen, that's the only thing that kind of gave me a satisfaction was the fact that you said he still might be a one-gap player. But that just tells me that there's going to be a lot of cover one and a lot of cover three. So it's going to be single high safety that we're going to be playing a lot. Is that what Arizona mostly played in? Better?
Yep. Cover one, cover three, mostly that. That's correct.
Okay, so, I mean, and then here's the thing. Right now, I don't think we have the safety to play cover one or cover three because I haven't seen anything that's impressed me with Goodson. No, not Goodson. What's his name?
Thompson, you talking about?
Darian Thompson.
I don't see it. I hope that we bring Matthew in here. I hope Matthew wants to take a prove it type of contract.
And Antonio, just I want to make sure you understand. Tyrann Mathieu did not play the single high safety position in Betcher's defense in Arizona.
He played strong safety. You're right. He played the inside of the box, right? Is that what it was?
He actually played most. He played a lot of slot corner for them, to be honest with you,
because they had Buda Baker too.
So I think that that's what we need. Then we're gonna need either to draft Mike the Alabama safety. Because right now, I don't know. I just don't think that single high is going to work with us.
But Antonio, you realize even if you're playing a 4-3, you're going to need a guy that's a good deep safety. It's not like in the old system, you also didn't need that player. Every team needs a good guy that can play center field at deep safety.
Not covering that up magically, yeah.
Yeah, that isn't unique to James Betcher's system.
No. I understand that. But we wasn't playing single high. We wasn't playing single high too much last year, was we?
To play it some.
Yeah, but we didn't play it as the Seahawks or Arizona, and that's what I'm just trying to say.
You played a lot of man-to-man last year, especially when you had Jenkins and Apple on the field.
And he's also, keep in mind, Antonio, he's also going to adapt to the personnel that's on the roster.
Correct.
I mean, he's going to mix and match and move things around. Because he played it one way in Arizona doesn't mean he's going to adopt it 100% here.
And I want to add this, too. I know you talk about fit to scheme. The defense stunk last year playing the 4-3. I mean, it was awful.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
No, yeah, you're right. Yeah, I mean, you got me there. I think that our defense stunk because our offense was terrible.
That's not true, though. If you look at the third down percentage, the red zone, the defense could not get off the field on third down. It wasn't the offense's fault. It was the defense's fault for not getting off the field on third down.
But if you check games out last year, we was close in games, and then towards the second half, we just couldn't keep defending anymore because we was just exhausted. We stayed on the
field. It's a false narrative.
But you also, if you look at the offensive production from 16 and 17, it's not as
it was almost the same.
Yeah. So the point is that, but the defense was great in 16, Antonio. So if the offense didn't dramatically change in terms of points and time of possession, all this other stuff, then how do you explain 16? Your defense was fine. Weren't getting worn down. 17. Now they're getting worn down, and the offense didn't dramatically change. So clearly, some of the responsibility lies on the defense, not making consistent stops, not getting off the field on third down, and putting itself in precarious spots. I mean, there has to be blame placed on that facet.
I credit that also to attrition. I mean, you go 2 years in a row expecting the same from a defense and putting in overusing a defense. You can't expect a top 10 defense if you're just punishing them like that. It's just like when a team wins a championship and you're asking them to play elite right off the season. They just had a longer season than everybody else. I believe the same thing for the defense. You can't ask for them 2 years in a row to go, to be a top 10.
Listen,
I'm not
disagreeing with your premise. No, you can never say, well, we were a top 10 defense in 16. We're just going to pencil ourselves in. But when you go from 10 to, 27 or 32, I don't think it's asking too much to say, all right, maybe you drop from 10 to the middle of the pack, 16, 17.
Right.
You're
Antonio.
Talking about you went all the way down.
And this is the last comment that I'm going to say, and I'm going to let you guys go because I know you guys got other people. But I think – and this is where I'm going to tie it back to the draft, unfortunately. It all depends how we're going to go in this draft. I really think that if we're trying to compete next year and also trying to build for the future, this upcoming draft, we're going to have a really average team next year. I hope that we either decide we're going for it all or we're going to plan for the future. And that's all I want to say, guys. And you guys I love listening to you guys. So
thank you, Antonio.
Appreciate the call, Antonio.
Yeah, great stuff, man.
So
thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it. Good stuff. Don't do me a favor. Don't take the defense off the hook for last year, please.
No.
Don't take the defense off the hook, please.
Everybody deserves responsibility across the board, special teams as well.
I mean, how many games, Lance, did the offense actually give them a lead late, especially in the first half of last season, and the defense handed it back?
or a bad punt led to terrible field position, right. And that combined with the defense led to the opposing score that ultimately sealed the game. So, I mean, it's too simplistic, John, to focus on one facet of the team last year, and that tells the whole story. The other thing that I wanted to piggyback off of in terms of what the last caller brought up, this is my personal pet peeve. I can't stand this philosophy of win now mode,
oh my God.
Win later
Thank
mode,
you.
Win tomorrow mode. Can I ask you this question, John? Okay, did the Cleveland Browns go into last season thinking they were going to go 0-16? Was that their goal?
I think you actually picked the one example where maybe it doesn't apply because Sashi Brown, I think, literally understood he was going to lose for a couple years and he tried to acquire
Fair
more
enough.
Draft picks.
All right, I'm going to bring up the standings then. We're going to bring up one that won't be countered back at me, right. Okay? If Cleveland's not a good enough example, okay, then I will find the team that I didn't think necessarily –
The Houston
met
Texans.
Expectations. Houston Texans. Right, even the Indianapolis Colts. And I know Luck got hurt. So,
Ryan
once
Watson
again,
got
not
hurt.
A great example. The Raiders. How about the Raiders? Okay. Mm-hmm. Raiders made the playoffs in 2016. Did they go into 2017 saying, hey, we're bringing back the nucleus team. Our goal is we're going to win six games.
No, of course not.
So, my point is, you're always in win now mode. You're always trying to win. At the same time, ideally, you want to be able to build for the future. But when we say, well, all of these moves are Dave Gettleman just wants to win for 2018. First of all, when you sign two 26-year-old linebackers, that's winning now and also winning two or three years down the road because you can build around those two guys. And I just, to me, it makes absolutely no sense to be sold the narrative that if they don't draft a quarterback – it's simply just winning now. No, if you draft a quarterback, you don't draft a quarterback. You want to win in 18, you want to win in 19, you want to win beyond that. That's always the goal. I never heard of an executive, John, going into a season saying, four wins. That's what we're hoping for. Four wins. We get to four wins. We're going to be in great shape. We're going to put check marks next to all of our names. Great job. Four-win season. Hoorah. Did you ever hear that?
See, I want to swing it the other way, and I think you made a good point. But to me, the worst mistake any team can make is say, to hell with the future, I'm going to win this year no matter what.
I agree with
and
that.
And I'm going to screw my salary cap down
100%
the road.
Agree with you.
And that's my biggest problem when people say, oh, I'm worried about winning now. We got Eli for 2 years. We have to win with Eli for within the next 2 years. Well, guys, look, for any NFL team, the chance of winning the Super Bowl in any given year is small. When you're coming off of 3-13, it's smaller than most, okay? It's really hard. You should never, ever say to hell with my future, I'm just putting it all against the wall for the next two seasons, especially when you're coming off a 3-13 year. That's stupid.
No, I'm in agreement with you.
And that's not what Dave Gettleman's doing.
There's no indication that that's happening.
Correct.
But here's the other thing, John. Whether they draft a quarterback at two, let's say they draft Saquon Barkley at two, let's say they draft Quentin Nelson at two, is there really a big difference if you go in any of those three positions that is indicating that it's all about 18 versus the future? Nelson can't be a player you could build around moving forward.
The only
Barkley
argument
is not a player you could build around moving forward.
The only argument I would make is that running backs have a shorter shelf life than
I'll
pretty much
that.
Every other position in the league. So I think maybe you can make the argument that you are, if you draft a running back, prioritizing now more than the future. But are you saying to hell with the future if you draft Barkley? Absolutely not. But I do think that's probably more of a immediate impact pick than a 7 or 8 year down the road type of pick,
but
you know what I mean.
Even if the shelf life is short for a running back, I still think it's reasonable to say he can help our team for at least the duration of his rookie contract.
Absolutely.
Which
sure.
to me is more than just the short term.
Which is at least five years.
So, you know, you're working with period of time that you could say he can make an immediate impact in 18,
correct.
And then we can at least find other ways to build around him moving forward. So, I mean, ideally, you want to simultaneously build for the future and win now. But I never heard of a team that dismisses one or dismisses the other and just has one vision moving forward. I don't buy that. I think teams are always trying to balance both, and maybe some are a little bit more aggressive than others, but there is nothing the Giants have done that indicates to me it's strictly 18, 18, 18, and 19 and 20. We'll worry about that when we get to it.
Yeah, there's no reason every player they've signed cannot be effective for the duration of their contract.
whether Eli's here or Eli's not here. And that should not be the centerpiece of discussing whether it's win now mode or future mode, because how many young quarterbacks have also come into teams, John, and thanks to the pieces around those quarterbacks have done fairly well.
Right. Don't you want a good team? Or if you believe that Davis Webb is the next guy, don't you want 3 years from now, let's say Eli finishes out his contract and moves on, don't you want when Davis Webb steps in 3 years from now to have a decent team around him so he has a chance to win? Of course you do.
Or else he's not going to have a chance to win or even thrive as an individual.
And trust me, when we take calls 3 years from now, let's say they don't win a Super Bowl in the next 2 years, and then, you know, they do this sell out for now thing that fans want to do, and they stink in 3 years, and in 2021 they go 4-12, or 2020 they go 4-12. Do you think fans are going to say, "Oh, it's okay because they tried to win really hard the last 2 years"? I don't think that's going to happen.
Of course, fans are going to be just as irritated because
exactly. The
impatience of a fan wants instantaneous gratification and instantaneous results. So, to me, the goal is put a competitive team together, but also bring in players that you feel can be usable moving forward here, where you could build around them. And also, when you do make the transition from Eli to another quarterback, you're not throwing that quarterback into a situation where it's baptism by fire.
Everything's a balance, Lance. If the Giants decide that, you know, Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen is their next great franchise quarterback and they pick them in April's draft, it doesn't mean they're not going to try to win football games in 2018. It just doesn't. It's a balance. You do what you can to win now, but you also have to prepare for what comes next. And that's what you try and do. 201-939-4513. Marcus in Brooklyn is up next. Hi, Marcus. How are you, pal? What's going on?
Hello, gentlemen. Great talking to you guys.
Thanks, man.
So I don't think people really understand how advantageous having the second pick in this draft really is. This isn't a normal draft. This is a quarterback draft. And things get silly when there's about four high-level quarterbacks that should be taken early.
It can, sure.
If the Browns take the Giants' the number one quarterback at the first pick, if they don't take the Giants' number one quarterback, you take the number one quarterback, and that's it. But if they do take him, I believe they should trade back to the fifth pick with the Broncos. I think you can probably get a first-rounder because this is a quarterback draft, and they want one, and the second pick is way much more appealing to them than it is us.
Oh, it depends on how they feel about the quarterbacks, though.
I think the contract that they gave Keenum is pretty much, we're going to let you start a year. We're going to keep this guy on the bench. After that, you got to
Marcus, I agree.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Marcus, I think there's still a very good chance, despite the contracts they gave out, that both the Jets and the Broncos will be in a market for a quarterback in the draft.
Deals.
The question is whether or not they believe one of these guys is worth trading capital to move up for. I think one of them probably will end up deciding that, but I'm not sure if it's a guarantee either.
Yeah, I also think they both can wait and still maybe get the quarterback that they want at five and six.
But if they identify one guy that they think is a franchise guy, that changes
the
formula.
Well, but also we're operating under not knowing that information.
Of course.
So,
absolutely.
I mean, I'm not saying that you're wrong, but when you say, well, the Giants should call Denver up and say, Denver, we'll take your five and you move up, I mean, Denver has to have the desire to want to move up.
Of course.
It can't just be a one-way stream here.
Absolutely, and I think they do. But here's the thing. At five, things get really interesting because, you know, at that situation, a quarterback gets picked 1 and 2. The Raiders, the Colts, 4 is the Browns. Neither of them are taking a quarterback.
But hold on. The Colts could trade down. You know,
Cardinals. They can trade out, and teams say like the Bills come up.
Yep.
Or they pick a positional player. If they pick a positional player, the Giants are there at five, and they could pick arguably the third quarterback plus have a first rounder next year. Now,
and
if
year this year.
Say four quarterbacks get picked in the first four picks, the Giants get the pick of the litter and a first rounder for next year, so they have assets if they want to do that. Now, if three quarterbacks get taken in the first four picks, now I think the fourth quarterback is Baker Mayfield. The team behind us are the Jets. I think we can get a ransom for that pick for any
Marcus, I was with you. I can't get into trading down twice scenarios. It's too much.
I mean,
that is too much hypothetical for me.
You can still get a great player, and then in the future draft, we will have the assets to get the quarterback.
Marcus, I'm with you. And I agree 100%. If the guy, and me and Lance have had this conversation, if the Giant, Fiegel's in, even Dottino, even though he doesn't say it often, I actually did get him to agree to this on the air a month ago.
Congratulations.
And yes, it was a miracle. If the guy is sitting there at two, the Giants believe is their future franchise quarterback, and they have great conviction about it, you make the pick because it's an impossible thing to find, okay? Period. Stop. Now, if that guy is not there at the quarterback position at two, my ideal scenario is what you threw out there without going through all the different what-ifs, who gets picked two or whatever. You go down to five or six, you pick up another two this year, another one next year, and then all of a sudden you're still getting one of the top three position players in the draft, whether it's a Bradley Chubb, a Saquon Barkley, a Quentin Nelson, or even a Minka Fitzpatrick, and you get additional picks to that, okay? That, to me, is a great scenario. And I think, and I appreciate the call, Marcus. Thanks a lot. I think that's a great spot. But like Lance pointed out, and it's a perfect point, you got to have two to tango. All right? What happens if the only guy knocking on your door to trade back are the Bills or the Cardinals, which means you got to drop out of the top 10 to make that trade? Then all of a sudden, are you thinking twice about it? Are you like, oh, boy, well, I'm not getting a premium player now. Do I want to move out of the top 10? That's when it gets tricky. Would you rather pick 12 and 22, or would you rather get Bradley Chubb, Saquon Barkley, or Quentin Nelson? Then it gets a little bit trickier if that option isn't there at 5 or 6.
Yeah, because, I mean, they may feel just as strongly. I'm referring to the Giants. They may have a quarterback in mind, but at the same time, they look at Barkley and Nelson as game changers, and they're like, well, why are we going to think about moving down, John? We like where we're at. The players are still available. Take the player, too. I mean, you have to ask yourself that if you're Dave Gettleman. You can't get, you know, thinking about 19, 20 and the stockpile of picks if you really are enamored by the player that is still on the board and you think it's good value at number two.
Here's the thing,
quarterback
though,
or not.
If you only go down to five, one of those two dominant position players will be there. You're going to get one of them anyway.
You would hope,
and,
yeah.
Well,
if the Browns
pick a quarterback and somebody else is moving up with you to draft a quarterback, one of those other two position players is going to be there. So that's when it gets a little bit interesting. You know what I mean? And that's why I think going to five makes a lot of sense. Once you start getting past that, then all of a sudden you get more question marks.
I always say this, too. If they don't draft a quarterback this year, there's also a variety of ways that you could go about finding a quarterback or somebody.
Very difficult ways.
It's difficult, but, you know, listen, this is an organization that signed Kerry Collins, and that worked out really well.
But that doesn't happen very often.
I like what Buffalo did. I like the A.J. McCarron signing because he's 28 years old. He's still young.
You have no idea what he is.
You don't know what he is, but you know what? He may turn out to be a guy that they can build around. And they may not have to worry about.
If A.J. McCarron becomes a Pro Bowl level quarterback, I would be shocked and blown away. Shocked.
Listen,
blown away. Shocked.
I thought for his limited time, he's performed decently.
He was fine. He's fine. But he's not a franchise quarterback.
I think, well, that the window is still there for him to be a franchise quarterback. I don't think it's closed.
Obviously, he's not
28 years old.
Obviously, he's not better than Andy Dalton.
Well, but I don't think there was a reason to bench Andy Dalton.
Well, if A.J. McCarron's better, that's a reason to bench Andy Dalton if McCarron's a better player.
Well, because if you're Cincinnati, if you're content with your quarterback, then
McCarron's better than A.J. Dalton, you bench A.J. Dalton for McCarron.
I don't necessarily agree with
Andy
that.
Dalton.
If a guy is, for example, if Brett Favre wanted to continue to play, and indicated no sign of retirement, you think automatically they were going to bench him for Aaron Rodgers?
If they think Aaron Rodgers gives them a better chance to win, they should have.
I don't think it would have been a given
and don't compare Andy Dalton to Brett Favre.
No, I'm not. I'm saying that when you have a quarterback that you figure is getting you to the playoffs and positioning you there, I don't think the urgency should be so quickly to get the hook out and pull the guy
if you
feel he is suitable at your quarterback position.
Yeah, but if you think the other guy's better, why wouldn't you play the guy you think is better and younger?
First of all, I don't think the Bengals were locked in that A.J. McCarron was better. But they also weren't in a position where they were going to pay two quarterbacks simultaneously decent money. I mean, that also.
Yeah, but A.J. McCarron was on a rookie contract.
No, but now he became an unrestricted
agent.
You're going to have to give him a deal.
I'm not saying they should have signed him as a free agent. I'm just saying before they let him go, if they thought he was that good and better than Andy Dalton, they should have played him over Andy Dalton.
But I just feel that the window is still open where he may have a good fit in Buffalo, and they may provide him with the talent that he could very well thrive.
We've had this conversation.
I mean, I don't think that's a crazy proposition if you're
no,
Buffalo.
No, it's not crazy. And I think as a stopgap quarterback, as they draft somebody, I think it's fine to have A.J. McCarron. It's okay. I think they got him on a very reasonable contract.
They did,
I think
which
that's
makes
fine
it
too.
Even a better deal for them.
Sure, yeah. But if you look at the last 15 years, the number of teams that have found their franchise quarterback on the free agent market is extremely small.
Of course, it's small, but also there's
it's
not
extremely
there's
small.
Not 28-year-olds that are signing constantly left and right as free agents, because most guys, you know, don't necessarily get a position like A.J. McCarron did, where you get granted from a restricted free agent to an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah, I know, but
so
I mean
that's a rare occurrence.
There are backup quarterbacks that hit the free agent market.
There are, but Bradford has an injury history, and all these other guys were young. Keenum's still young too, but you've had more time
years old.
To
He's
see
not young.
Them. You've had more time to see them. McCarron is still at a small sample size where it's not crazy to think if he finally gets a starting position where he's the every day, every week starter, that maybe things click.
I'm not saying he can't
be a
low end.
I still think there's upside there.
I think he could be a low end starter in the league. I think the idea that he's going to be a Pro Bowl quarterback, I think is there a chance? Sure. Is it a really small chance? I think so.
But I'm not. I mean, I'm looking for a guy that gives me stability, and that's something that Buffalo hasn't had.
I want a really good quarterback.
No, I do too. But you know what? I mean, listen. Whether he makes one Pro Bowl, two Pro Bowls, 10 Pro Bowls. I mean, first of all, a lot of that is the popularity contest, especially
Pro Bowl caliber
position.
Numbers. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. And once again, I think that if they give him the necessary talent, I don't think it's crazy to think that A.J. McCarron can't be a solid quarterback for Buffalo for the next 5 or 6 years and be more than a bridge. Everybody's labeling him as a bridge, and A.J.
Well,
McCarron
define
may be more
solid
than a
quarterback.
Meaning a guy that's going to position you to make the playoffs. That's
yeah,
what I want.
But I'm looking for more than that.
Well, I mean, listen, does every quarterback going to position you to go and win a Super Bowl right now in the NFL? There's a lot of solid guys, though, that I would take in a heartbeat.
No, but I'm trying to find the guy.
I am, but there's not, to me, if Buffalo puts all of its resources in on a quarterback when they also have still other question marks on their roster, and you know you have A.J. McCarron, I'm just not going to be so quickly in a rush to give up all of my resources where I could use also my 2 first-round picks to address other areas.
No, but eventually,
that's my point.
But eventually to give yourself a real chance to get a franchise quarterback, you do have to put all your resources
into
it.
But what I'm saying,
that's what you have to do to find a franchise quarterback.
If Buffalo's not sold on any of these guys,
then
I'm not in a rush to necessarily give up everything.
I'm not telling you to do it for the sake of doing it.
No, but that's what everybody is saying, that Buffalo should be in a rush to get rid of all of its picks.
Well, I would think that they're acquiring all these picks because they are sold on one of these guys.
They could very well be thinking about making a move. And listen, if they're content and everybody in the room is happy, then more power to Buffalo.
Yeah, but this idea, this is why I'm arguing with you, because there's an idea out there that just go find the quarterback. It's no problem.
No, you gotta feel good about the quarterback.
It's literally the hardest thing to do in all of pro sports to find a quarterback. It's the hardest thing to do, and I'm not just gonna say, "Oh, we'll find one. We'll draft one in the third round. It'll work out.
We'll sign a backup. It'll be okay."
It's really freaking hard.
I just think that there is enough upside and potential with A.J. McCarron at this point in his career, where I wouldn't be at the point where I'd be saying, "I've seen enough," and there's no way that this guy could pan out.
No, he's fine.
That's why
he's fine to roll the dice on. But he's not a guy you hand your franchise to.
No, if they want to draft a quarterback, it shouldn't prevent them. But what I'm saying is he very well could turn out to be the answer. For the deal that they gave him and for the age that he is at, he very well could be their quarterback.
I thought it was a good low-risk,
high-reward,
potentially high-reward signing.
And that's why I like what Buffalo did.
Sure. I have no problem with what Buffalo did.
And I think that they at least vision that he could be a possibility. At the same time, we may position ourselves to get a quarterback, but I don't know what their evaluators think of A.J. McCarron.
But let me put it this way. In my opinion, not be a franchise guy versus being the franchise guy, I'd put it like 85-15.
I mean, listen.
80-20.
Nothing's guaranteed when it comes to the NFL. Even if you move up to draft,
yeah, but
a guy,
some things are.
Two,
but some things are
guaranteed.
More. But some things are more likely than others.
They're more likely. But listen, there's been plenty of examples of guys that have been taking in the top five, and you don't hear about them, or even taken in the first round, and you don't hear about them anymore. So
I have some numbers for you, Lance.
A lot of guys. No, I understand.
Of place,
a percentage.
Of course,
I've looked at the Hall of Famers too. I'm aware of everybody in the Hall of Fame and where they were drafted. I'm aware that the numbers increase based on where you draft them.
Dramatically.
But I'm just saying that nothing's a guarantee. in the NFL.
Nothing's a guarantee
and
in the world.
I wouldn't be so quick, once again, to give up all of my resources to just reach for a quarterback simply because the court of public opinion
thinks
you need a quarterback.
But it's not necessarily a reach in it because of the court of public opinion. What if you believe the guy's the guy?
Yeah, well, but I'm operating on information that I don't know. I don't know if Buffalo believes that they have. Buffalo may feel good about three different guys. Would I want to now put everything in one basket when I'm in between on three guys? I wouldn't necessarily be in a rush to do that.
I think that's an easy way to never make a decision on a quarterback.
Well, if Sam Darnold is their number one guy and Darnold gets taken with the first overall pick, would you then move up if you're sort of in between with Josh Rosen and Josh Allen and Baker Mayfield?
If I don't believe in one of the quarterbacks, I would not trade away everything to get that player.
And that's how I feel Buffalo should operate.
No, but you don't know that they don't believe in one of the other guys.
No, I know I don't, but that's what I'm saying. Right. So the argument could go back and forth both ways is what I'm saying. I mean, at this point, if you don't know how strongly Buffalo feels, you can make an argument both ways. If Buffalo feels strongly, I'm all for them going after quarterback. But if they don't, I'm also okay rolling the dice with AJ
McCarron. For example, I got a tweet the other day.
More than content with that.
And you're well the tweeter. Nick LaBella.
Okay.
Whenever the Giants go down in the first quarter, he says they're the worst team in the NFL.
I am aware with him.
Okay?
Yes.
And we love Nick. He's a good listener. He's a good follower. We like him. He's a good dude. He literally said the other day on Twitter that if one of these quarterbacks turned into Matt Ryan, that's not good enough for him to be his next franchise quarterback.
Well, that's ridiculous. I mean,
he's not Eli Manning.
No,
and he hasn't been consistently. It's crazy. It's crazy talk.
Yeah, but I mean, it's possible that these five quarterbacks, if we look back 4 or 5 years from now, and remember, a lot depends on what teams they go to and the talent around them. I mean, two or three of these guys may not very well pan out.
Oh, sure. So there's a chance of that.
So, I mean, that's why.
Absolutely.
You know, it's fine with using the logic. The higher you pick a quarterback, the more likely he is to succeed. I get that. But I don't want to hear that, Buffalo or any other team should definitely take a quarterback simply because the percentages are in their favor. You know, you have to be at a point where there's conviction around the room everybody is on the same page.
You have to trust your evaluation.
Yes.
You have to
and
trust
your scouts and everybody else.
Because when you pick a quarterback for the sake of picking a quarterback, that's how you wind up with Kyle Bowler, you wind up with Jake Locker, you wind up with Christian Ponder, and you run into trouble.
And then that
screws up
your franchise for years to come. You can't make up for that easily.
But in my personal opinion, and I'm no scout, but I think I like to think I know something, these guys, for the most part, are of a higher caliber of prospect than the Bowlers and the Ponders and stuff like that.
That's fine.
That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Alan in Brooklyn. He's been holding a while. Alan, thanks for holding on, man. You guys all got sucked into a very hearty debate between Lance and I. That was fun. What's up, Alan?
Hey, no problem. How you guys doing?
We're great.
Good, all right.
I haven't called since last offseason when Lance said I asked the dumbest question ever in the world.
Uh-oh.
So, if you bear with me, he said, I asked if you two guys race, who would win? He said that's the dumbest question in the world.
Okay. I don't remember that conversation, but anyway.
I love you.
Did we lose him?
Because, No, I love the back and forth you guys do. You guys make fun of each other. P-Dot of his age. Lance because of his height. John because of his hair. But anyway,
my question is
the new cornerback we just signed.
Yes. Yeah.
Is he a slot corner or outside?
Kenny Williams.
Yeah, he hasn't done a lot of. He's primarily in his career more of a special teams player. He's done some stuff in the secondary, not a ton. He's more of a depth role player type of guy, Sean. I'm sorry. What's your name?
Alan.
I'm sorry, Alan. I already took your name off my board here.
This is what happens when you say he has no hair.
Exactly.
That's the trigger point.
I apologize.
From Alan. Yeah.
But honestly, I'm not positive where he would fit best. Simply because I would not. He's not a guy that I would count on to step in and play a super prominent role on defensive snaps next year. I think he'll have a chance to compete. Maybe he'll prove everybody wrong and he'll earn a way on. And I think that'd be great. But he's not a guy that, all right, well, he's going to replace Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie. That's not the role I would expect him to come in and play.
I got you. One more question real quick, because you guys were just talking about it. If we take a quarterback, do you realize we're going to have only 4 usable picks to help the team?
So like, what?
Because we only have 5 picks.
So what?
Unless we trade back, that's the only way I would take a quarterback.
Alan, the most important thing this franchise will do in the next 4 years is find Eli Manning's replacement. It's literally the most important thing they will do.
I'm on the side of P-Dot, we have it already.
Well, no, but no, so here's the thing. And Paul, I got Paul to admit this too, even though he refuses to say it consistently. You don't know you have his replacement. You may think you do, but you don't know you do. It is an educated guess.
I hear you. I just think
it just is. Alan, I want to ask you a serious question, Alan. Why do you think Davis Webb is the next franchise quarterback? Give me the facts that you have witnessed personally that make you believe he's the next franchise quarterback.
Right now, as we speak today, he had a year with Eli, a year in the NFL. He has the ability, the arm strength, the everything that these guys have now.
And Alan,
minus the year with Eli.
When did you see all that? When he was on the field for all those regular season games?
I don't need to see it. I know what happened, though.
How do you know if you haven't seen it?
No.
I
don't need to see it on the field. But what I do know today is he had a year with Eli, and these kids didn't.
Alan, is it more important to be more talented or to sit behind Eli Manning for a year?
And I believe he is talented.
Alan,
he's 6'5", 200 pounds, never been hurt, no concussions.
Well, he's been in the league for 1 year, in fairness.
And didn't play any snaps.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about facts for the course of his career, but I think it's more important what you do in the NFL. Now, Ryan Nassib played behind Eli Manning. What happened to Ryan Nassib?
We have Rosen with a concussion.
No, Alan, answer Lance's question.
Ryan Nassib played behind Eli Manning. What happened to Ryan Nassib?
How come Ryan Nassib? Oh, okay, so if Ryan Nassib didn't hurt his elbow, he was the next franchise quarterback.
No, we already figured that out when he never played for the last 6 years. We know he was just there for backup. This guy got drafted
fairness, Ryan Nassib barely played too.
Davis Webb had the same exact first year that Ryan Nassib had. What's the difference?
I mean, you're going to tell me because Ryan Nassib got into late game situations when they were lopsided, which was what, maybe like two or three over the course of his career, that you saw enough out of that to say that he's that much different than Davis Webb at this point? I mean, Alan, I don't think we're operating with a lot of sample size here to make bold declarations.
I hear what you guys are saying. I just don't believe any one of those quarterbacks right now is better than Davis Webb.
Well, but here's the thing. Even if you think Davis Webb is the guy, okay, and you're entitled to your opinion, to what John was bringing up, and I agree with John, your argument is they shouldn't take a quarterback because then they're left with only four picks to help 2018. But see, this goes back to the debate that John and I were countering a previous phone call about the win now versus the win tomorrow versus the win 3 years from now. Your draft for 2018 is not for 2018 alone. Your draft for 2018 is beyond that. So if you feel at number two the quarterback is the best value, then you're saying to yourself, and Dave Gettleman was quoted as saying this, John, when he was at the Combine. He said, you wanted that number two overall pick, a Hall of Fame caliber player, right? I'm paraphrasing, but that's what he said.
Give or take.
You want Lawrence Taylor, essentially.
And basically Shermer said the same thing.
Okay, so if the quarterback, in their eyes, is that number two pick, then you're telling me, Alan, they should shy away from the quarterback simply because that guy's not going to be on the field in 2018, but he could help your franchise for maybe 7 or 8
How about
to 9 years moving forward. Well, I'm being
He's a quarterback.
Conservative, but yes, 15 would be the ideal, but let's say even you get 8 or 9 years out of him. So that's what your mindset is, Alan.
I just don't see with these guys.
What if the Giants do?
But what if they believe in a quarterback at number two from a value standpoint, they're looking at, to me, the team beyond 2018. See, I think your mindset is on 18. Got to bring in a guy at number two. He's got to come in. He's got to light up the scoreboard. He has to meet this criteria. Every GM will tell you, I can't just draft for 1 year. I've got to draft for a few years beyond that because – what is the one criticism from Giants fans about previous drafts, Alan? Isn't it the fact that how many guys got a second contract, right? Don't you hear that a lot? How many draft picks got a second contract over the last 5 or 6 years? Don't you want, with the number two overall pick, don't you want a guy that's going to get a second contract?
That's true.
Every GM has to look at it that way. So you want to pick a guy that you know is going to be a cornerstone of your franchise. You can't just think about a guy that's going to come in and wow in 18. You can't afford to have that mindset. That's how rough drafts put you in a tough position where now you have to use free agency to make up for that. Dave Gettleman clearly does not want to put himself in that position.
I just want them to trade back. I don't want them to pick a quarterback.
And I don't think that's a bad move. I'm not disagreeing with you there. But if they are content with a guy who has great value at number two, I don't think that's a bad move either.
And, Alan, and thanks for the call. We're past 1 o'clock. We got to go. Thank you, buddy. Good stuff. And I want to read a quote, okay? Davis Webb was asked a question on December 20th, okay? This was after he got some reps in practice. He got like a dozen reps in practice. He said, are the reps today enough to feel comfortable in a game? This is his answer. I don't know. I just don't know. Getting ready for a game mentality, I do every single week prepared-wise. I try to act like I'm a starter each and every week. I try to approach it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But you're asking the man himself if he's ready to go in and be a starter, and he says, I don't know. And do you know why? It's an honest answer.
Yeah, I mean,
he's never done it before. He's never done it before. And, guys, I'm not a Davis Webb hater. I think he has a chance to be a starting quarterback in this league and be a good starting quarterback. But this certainty that people speak about it with, it's unhealthy. And if a franchise acted that way, like there's a 100% chance that this player is going to be the guy, that's not how you run a franchise. It's not. There are no 100% certainties. The same way you – and this is the amazing thing. The argument is, well, there's no guarantee these quarterbacks are going to be the guy. But then at the same time, you're guaranteeing Davis Webb is.
Yeah, you can't have it.
So how do you know that Davis Webb is the guy, but you don't know that, but you say, oh, you can't be sure that these guys are? You can't have it both ways. And I've said this a million times. We're talking probabilities here, folks. What's the chance Davis Webb is your next franchise quarterback? Well, what do you think the chance is? One of the guys in this draft class is going to be your franchise quarterback. It's all probabilities. You want to make it as certain as possible that you have Eli's successor ready when he is ready to turn in his cleats. What's the best way to do that? And that's what the front office is going to figure out. There's no one way to do it. And if the front office doesn't believe in one of these quarterbacks, they should not pick one. Okay? If they do believe in one, they should, regardless of Davis Webb. And then you know what? If Davis Webb turns out to be a really good player and they draft a guy and he's a really good player, what's the quarterback market like out there, by the way?
Yeah, from a value standpoint.
What is it? It's not like you're just stuck with them and you lose them for nothing. That's all I'm saying. All right, I want to get to the final call here. Sorry, I had to get that off my chest. Sean in California. Sean, you're last.
I'll make it fast.
Go ahead,
hey,
buddy.
What's up, guys? I'll make it fast. I just want to get you to talk about the Giants owe Eli Manning $5 million on Sunday. That's really accounting for at the cap, right?
Say that again? I didn't hear what
say
you said.
Say that again?
Yeah.
The Giants owe Eli Manning $5 million on Sunday. That's really accounting for at the cap.
I'm not sure how the NFL technically counts it, but the Giants know what the contract is, and they will have prepared for any of those roster bonus type things.
Gotcha. And with that, with the quarterback talk, I wanted to talk about, free agency real fast. I think that trade with getting Okutu from the Rams was really aggressive on Dave Gutterman's part, and I really like that trade. I mean, and with signing a Nate Solder, with this whole quarterback talk, how do we know Eli Manning doesn't want to play till he's 41 years old? And then we go and we take a quarterback, pick number one overall. Yes, it's a deep quarterback class, and yes, it's a deeper class in the next couple of years, but at the same time, what if we take a quarterback at number one and Eli Manning wants to play to 41? I mean, like, I think we should take a quarterback in this draft. But, I mean, like, I think we should take, I said we couldn't Smith a long time ago. But, like, yeah, we can get him, like, at eighth or something if we trade up. But I think Nelson, I mean, like, we have our left tackle. Nelson's a bomb pick. And if teams try to get, trade off to get, a quarterback for the Browns, I even think Nelson's a better pick than Barkley. I mean, I'm high on Barkley. I want Barkley. But if you look at free agency and the way we're lining up, I mean, like, Nelson would be the best pick for us to win now and to get moving now. And we can find a quarterback in round three and round four and have
to. Well, that goes back to, Sean, that goes back to
the next couple of years.
Probability.
Make them how we want him to make them, Like, build him how we want our next Giants quarterback to be, right?
Well, Sean,
thank you, Sean. Yeah, we got
to
go.
That goes back to the probability about if you bank on a third or a fourth round pick panning out versus a second overall pick. So that's why you want to improve and increase your probability.
Since the year 1990, 15% of the quarterbacks selected in the third round became Pro Bowlers. 3 of 40 started in the Super Bowl. The average years as a primary starter was 1 year. Okay? Quarterbacks picked 1 through 5 had a 57% chance of making the Pro Bowl, a 6-year average as a primary starter, and 8 went to the Super Bowl. Okay?
Now, that's since 1990?
Since 1990, yes.
In terms of the quarterbacks.
Yes. Yeah. So, folks, you just don't find one. Okay? It's not that simple.
But
and just one other thing, and the point he made about Eli. Yeah, if Eli wants to play till he's 41, that's fine. He's under contract for 2 more years. When that 2 years is up, the Giants are under no obligation to say, okay, well, we have to pay you a lot more money to play here. If the Giants have a guy that they believe is the franchise quarterback, it's okay to move on, folks. Nowhere in Eli Manning's contract does it say it's his right to play quarterback for the Giants until he's 10 feet under, all right? Yeah. I mean, he has a contract. That's what his contract is. It's that simple.
And the whole point is you want to prepare for that transition before Eli is ready to hang it up or call it quits or his contract runs out.
Correct.
So that's what they're trying to determine during the course of this period. And I don't think you can blame the organization for having that philosophy. I think the Steelers and the Chargers are in a very similar circumstance where they're also going to want to get the guy
sure.
that's going to replace Philip Rivers and Ben Roethlisberger, respectively. So, I mean, every team wants to have that Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers situation. It's very difficult to accomplish that, but that's the goal.
Do you want to be the Cardinals?
You don't want to have interruption.
Do you want to be in the Cardinals situation this year where Carson Palmer retires and they got to give Sam Bradford, who's never healthy, $20 million a year? And then they're sitting there looking for a quarterback in the draft? It's not a good position to be in.
And ideally, you want the young quarterback to learn from the previous guy because, once again,
sure.
if you're going to continue to run the same system, better to see it through the lens of a polished veteran. So, I mean, there's certainly a lot of pros to have the guy in-house as opposed to waiting before he retires. And Davis Webb is going to have that advantage to continue to learn. But when you don't have a sample size to go by, I mean, I was bringing up A.J. McCarron earlier. The difference between A.J. McCarron and any other rookie or young guy sitting behind a proven quarterback is McCarron at least has been in regular season games. Also, he's played in a postseason game. Small sample size, but I've got something to go by where I've seen him throw. I've seen him make decisions. I've seen him interact with some decent talent that I feel something could translate. All of these other guys, John, I could flip a coin to tell you how I think they're going to pan out. Certainly a guy like Davis Webb, who hasn't even been on the field for one regular season snap.
And again, that's not us saying he's not as good of a chance, and he's not a good player, he's not going to be a quarterback. We're not saying that. The point is that there's still a lot of unknowns there. And there's the type of certainty that And I feel like you guys have kind of twisted your heads into a knot here. On your way to insisting that the Giants have to trade Barkley, the argument you make is that you know Davis Webb is the next franchise quarterback. You can argue to take Barkley without saying something that's patently nonsensical. And that's nonsensical. You don't know that. You may believe that. You may think that it's likely. You don't know that. It is not a fact. It is an opinion. Based on, as Lance said, very little information because the sample size is infinitesimally small, okay? Guys can be great in a meeting room and great at practice and then be terrible in games. It happens all the time in this league, all the time. And I'm not telling you Davis Webb is that guy. I don't know. It's okay to say I don't know. I don't know. Nobody knows. His quarterback's coach last year didn't know. He thought maybe he has a chance and he could do it. He didn't know. Nobody's a crystal ball here. There are no guarantees in life. It's not the way it works. You just maximize your chances. And
the only thing I'm just going to add is the most important fact here is also the man who's now the general manager and the head coach were not here when that player was drafted. That also plays a role in terms of the vision. If Jerry Reese was still here, you want to make that argument? All right, the guy running the team is the one that chose to pick him. The guy now running the team did not make that selection. So who's to say that he's tied to him and he has the same philosophy and vision of him as a player as the previous regime did? I mean, that is a huge fact that can't be dismissed.
Have a good weekend, everybody.
Yes.
We had to hit on the draft again and get me all riled up.
Good job by the fans. That I will give him a thumbs up to. Whether or not I agree with their points, I still think it was a great job to rattle his cage.
I'm rattled.
Yes.
But I'm going to enjoy some college basketball. Hard at work.
Oh, boy.
For Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmelk. Dave Dominic's mad at us. He's not going to be our friend for the rest
lunch
of the week.
Lunch
will busy.
Be 20 minutes delayed. Everybody will live.
Everybody be good. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday on Giants.com.
Have a good one.